Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the program today, the boss of the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Pat Mulroy. On the Power Pundit panel today, Ryan Erlin, Warren Hardy, and Rose McKinney-James. It's all coming up next on all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, the world's largest industrial park, the resort at Red Hawk, the Whittemore Peterson Institute, where today's discoveries are tomorrow's cure, and the Las Vegas Review-Journal and ReviewJournal.com.
I'm Mark Amaday, and I approve this message. I grew up here. I don't ever recall seeing the economy this bad. Friends, family, we've all been affected. But the human toll of this recession is frustrating for all of us. Instead of getting better, things have gotten worse. Washington has failed. It's up to us. Let's cut regulations, slash taxes on small business, and put our federal lands to work for creating jobs for all of Nevada.
All right, Sam, let's check on some commercial buildings, see how their roofs are holding up.
Some business owners can't replace their roofs right now. That's where our free inspections really help out.
Hold on. Let's go inverted. We'll get a closer look.
What do you think?
Well, it certainly can use some preventive maintenance.
Yeah, that would definitely extend the life of this roof.
You ready to check the next one?
Maybe next time we can just take a ladder.
You watch your company's bottom line, and I'll cover the top of it.
How will new energy technology make our lives better? Will geothermal, wind, and solar energy be a bigger part of our future? Yes. And soon it will all be in our backyard. Learn more at nvenergy.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are always pleased to welcome back to the program the general manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority, Pat Mulroy. Pleasure to have you on the program, man.
It's a delight to be here again, Sam.
Thank you. A big story now. We're airing this a week after we tape it, but a big story broke this morning from the New York Times about water banking and a lawsuit in Kern County, California, and where a lot of the local growers and farmers had been banking water, but it affected a lot of the other people in the area because the water levels dropped. The Southern Nevada Water Authority banks a lot of water in Arizona, for example.
Correct.
If this lawsuit is successful, how will that affect the banking properties of the Southern Nevada Water Authority?
Well, you know, I have to be very honest with you. I've not read the article. And
that is a first in all these years.
I have not read that article. No, I've been sticking to work today. So I don't even know what the particulars of that lawsuit are.
The bottom line is that there were various groups of farmers and growers, pomegranates, carrots,
right,
and other things that they were growing down in Southern California that they had banked water for. They now needed to use the water in a drought situation, I guess, over the last couple
right.
of years. That lowered the water table for everybody else. And I'm just looking at,
you have to remember, California doesn't have a groundwater law. So there are no restrictions on how much you can take out in any given year. For example, we have a water bank here in Southern Nevada. The state engineer will not allow us to take more than 40,000 out in any given year. The same holds true with our agreement with Arizona. There are limitations on how much we can take in any given year. So if those farmers tried to replace all the supplies that they had lost from the in-state project and from the Bay Delta by pumping massive amounts of groundwater, it would have an effect. So it's not just banking the water, it's taking it out in a measured way.
And you apply the same rules to Northeast Nevada if that agreement comes through?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Nevada's got the strictest groundwater law anywhere in the country, and we will only be allowed to take what the state engineer would afford us a water right for in any given year. He already awarded those water rights once. We're going back to hearing again in the fall. So there's strict limitations on that. And on top of that, we signed an agreement with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, with the Bureau of Land Management, with the National Park Service, with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, that forever they will help make all decisions on how much water we can take out of that basin at any given time. And it's going to react to conditions as they exist. The infiltration basins that we plan to put at the base of the mountains are just there to replenish the groundwater that we take under our water right. It's not there to create a water bank.
Let's move on to the next topic. You've got to be pleased with what's coming into Lake Mead now, that Colorado Rockies had a good winter, and as did Northern Nevada as well. How much, because there were pretty wide estimates a couple of months ago of how much the lake will rise. How far do you think the lake will rise?
I think the lake will come back at least 40 feet.
40 feet.
From its all-time low. From its all-time low. Well, you have to remember that this was one of the wettest winters ever experienced in the Rocky Mountains. This was an extraordinarily wet winter, and it comes after 11 years of extraordinarily dry winters. So I think we're in a period of extreme volatility. I mean, Lake Mead will be half full when everything is said and done, which means we're still in the danger zone. I mean, we don't have the same resilience we have when the reservoir is full. And you have to remember mesovie. So the further you go down in the reservoir, the faster the rate of decline. But having said that, we're delighted. What it does is it really makes us comfortable that our third intake will be in place before the lake would drop to really critically dangerous levels. And it gives us a breather.
Northern Nevada also had, I think, the sixth wettest winter on record. And having lived in Nevada since 1978 and being a weatherman for 23
right.
years, I saw a lot of different years where we would see 4 or 5 years of where we didn't get normal precipitation. And then all of a sudden, you'd have a huge amount of snow come down, as we did this year. And all of a sudden, things that they said wouldn't fill up for years, like Lake Lahontan this past year, suddenly had 100,000 extra feet of water in there, which was unbelievable.
Right.
Do you look at this from a climate change perspective? And do you believe that we are truly going undergoing an abnormal climate change rather than the normal historical climate change over millions of years?
Well, you can go back and look at the hydrographs through tree ring analysis, and you can look in the Colorado River Basin, and you will see protracted 20, even 30-year periods of drought. And in the middle of those, you'll see a spike of an abnormally high year. Having said that, I think we are going through an extremely volatile climate pattern right now, and that makes me very concerned. It has wreaked a lot of havoc and a lot of heartache along the Mississippi River. It's caused massive destructions of farmland. When you look at the economic loss that what is good for us has caused in other parts of the country, it's staggering. So I think we need to get used to a new normal. And a new normal isn't predicting a particular runoff in any given year. It's recognizing that there is a band of possibility and knowing what you'll do within that band of possibility.
Okay, more with Pat Mulroy when we come back.
To contact Nevada Newsmakers, call 775-857-2244 or go to NevadaNewsmakers.com.
The Nevada Beer Wholesalers encourages the responsible consumption of beer. The Nevada Beer Wholesalers Association are sponsors and participants in many community-based efforts such as school education programs, safe ride home, recycling programs, alcohol-free after-prom and graduation parties, safe boating campaigns, and designated driver programs. They are family-owned businesses employing 2,000 Nevadans. They also collect and pay the state excise tax. The Nevada Beer Wholesalers Association, delivering more than just beer.
Press on, Southern Nevada. It's a new beginning. Information the way you need it. We are fighting for you every day to make your life better. The facts. So you can succeed. So you can plan. So you can dream. And always remember, press on.
Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Pat Mulroy, who is the general manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. So tell me, how are we progressing on this third straw? For folks in the north that may not understand that, there are two intake valves for Lake Mead that supply the water to the area, but you were getting dangerously close to going below that second intake, so you started work on one of the largest public works projects, maybe the biggest, right, in the state's history, to build a third straw. But there were all kinds of problems with tunnels collapsing, and then you had to do a huge additional work order to get this thing going.
Correct.
How is it going now?
Well, I have great news for you, Sam. The starter tunnel is complete. And we are now shoring up the starter tunnel. We'll be putting in all the hardware that's necessary with the rail lines and all the accoutrements that need to go into the tunnel. And by the end of August, early September, we will start lowering the TBM machine.
That's the big boring machine.
That's the big boring machine. It'll go down in pieces,
right,
and then it'll be assembled within the starter tunnel, and then it will begin to be able to bore.
Am I right? This is about 2 football fields long?
600 feet long.
That is amazing.
It's an incredible piece of machinery. It cost us $42 million. But I'll tell you, I'm so delighted that the starter tunnel is finished. The last blast happened yesterday. They're mucking it out, and they're putting in the steel reinforcements. And so the first real dangerous part of this is complete.
Okay, when do you anticipate the boring beginning?
We expect it'll take them from September probably till January to assemble the boring machine, because it's in various pieces. It has to be debugged. It has to make sure that it's running. And then by January, we will begin the boring.
Now, what is done to mitigate a collapse of this new boring tunnel that you're going to be putting in?
Oh, after the boring machine is in?
Right.
The boring machine itself will hold back any incursions. And then as the boring machine goes through, if you go out to the Lake Mead right now, you'll see a stockpile of these concrete rings that go in right behind the boring machine. And once those concrete rings are in, it's stable.
How long do you think before completion of the project?
We expect to be delivering water through that project in the summer of 2014.
Wow, and so that will be concurrent with the second straw that you're bringing water in? If the water level is above the second straw, you'll be using both?
We'll be using both. A lot of this for us is also water quality, because you have to think that as the lake constricts, in the summer, all those contaminants, whether it's from recreation, whether it's from the Las Vegas wash, they get trapped at the top. And so if the intake is close to the top, it takes all that lesser quality water. So we want to take water from the lowest, coolest, best quality place in Lake Mead. So we'll be judging which tunnel to take it out of, as long as we have 2 tunnels in operation, based on water quality demands.
You know, it was interesting. I read an article, somebody who was manufacturing beer was importing water for the beer because they didn't like the quality of Lake Mead. Will they now be able to use Lake Mead water, you think?
Look, the quality of Lake Mead water has always been an issue, and it's not the safety concerns that everybody thinks about, those contaminants that we take out. It's the hardness of the water. In the 1970s, before this plant opened, the first plant opened, the community voted not to soften the water supply. And you have to imagine that a water drop that starts in Wyoming and bounces across, you know, hundreds of miles of rock to get to Lake Mead is going to have some minerals in it. And it's very hard. That's what the problem is. That's what the complaint is.
Let's move on to another topic as we rapidly run out of time here. Henry Bream reporting for the Review Journal, talking about the federal officials are collecting public input on the exhaustive review of plans to pipe groundwater to Las Vegas from eastern Nevada. You're also getting continued pushback from the folks in Utah. Where do we stand with this project at this time?
Well, 2 things are happening concurrently. We're going back to hearing in the fall, and we're going back to hearing only on those basins where we already had water rights once. And the environmental impact statement that the Bureau of Land Management has now been working on for 7 years is finally on the street as a draft. There's a public comment period that we will be going through. And then hopefully in the spring, there will be a record of decision to grant the right-of-way for the project. It also includes not only Snake Valley in the EIS, it also includes all the water that Lincoln County has water rights to. That is part of our agreement with Lincoln County. We've agreed to move on behalf of Lincoln County. With Utah, there is still tremendous pushback out of Utah. We had a negotiated agreement that has yet to be finalized on the Utah side. It was signed by Alan Biaggi when he was Director of Natural Resources. I took it to the board. It was approved. It is sitting in Utah. There seems to be no willingness on the Utah side. And Sam, I got to tell you, what's really upsetting to us is that the whole time this agreement is sitting in Utah, not being signed, Utah is awarding water rights in Snake Valley. So there's something just not right about what's going on, and it's disturbing.
And your thoughts on how to deal with that?
Well, it's very difficult to have those kind of open confrontations with another state. But there's two things. I mean, the only reason we even need this agreement is because there's a provision in the Lincoln County Act that requires it. So it was an act of Congress. We might want Congress to revisit that issue if we can't get anywhere. And quite frankly, the other is to file a lawsuit in the Supreme Court for equitable apportionment of Snake Valley. The agreement that Utah has is solid. It has a massive commitment for monitoring and mitigation. It's more than they would ever get out of a U.S. Supreme Court case. So I'm going to remain optimistic that as we continue down this process, there will be a resolution to it. I mean, at some point there has to be.
Sig Rogich on this program, in speaking on behalf of Senator Reid's re-election, said that who do you want to have at the table negotiating these kind of water compacts? And he talked about Senator Reid and also Orrin Hatch. We've seen Bombette be bounced out of the election campaign in the last go-around in Utah, and Orrin Hatch is facing the same kind of pressure for not being conservative enough. Does that concern you as well? And you've got about 30 seconds.
I got 30 seconds. I don't think it'll be resolved at that level. I think it's more of a governor-to-governor issue at this point than it is a senatorial one, unless we decide it needs to be taken out of that Lincoln County Lands Act, and there needs to be an amendment.
And that's where we have to leave it. Always a pleasure to have on here, and we look forward to having you back soon.
I'll come back.
All
thanks,
right.
Sam.
Thank you. We'll be right back on Nevada Newsmakers after this timeout.
To get a DVD copy of any Nevada Newsmakers program, call 775-857-2244. The cost is $30, including shipping, handling, and tax.
As the stewards of the land, it is our responsibility to grow our businesses while keeping a watchful eye on our environment. We do this at TRI with conscientious development decisions. For example, the TRI Water and Sewer Companies are designing a new wetland program to polish the waste effluent to a superior water quality standard, while biofuel companies like Fulcrum Bio and Advanced Refining Concepts are producing clean and alternative energy from landfill waste and natural products. The Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, building economic prosperity for Nevadans.
Help keep our children from being left behind this summer.
Join Wells Fargo and News 4 to stuff a bus with school supplies for Northern Nevada kids in need. From pencils to paper, backpacks to binders, nothing is too small, and anything can make a big difference for local children who can't afford the necessary supplies to be successful in class.
You can donate at the Kitsky Lane Walmart August 12th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Tired of fussing with giant pasta pot strainers, stirring, and testing just for a plate of pasta?
Hi, Kathy Mitchell here with Pasta Boat, the amazing new 5-in-1 pasta cooker that serves perfect pasta without the hassle. Just put in the pasta, add water to the serving line, and pop it in the microwave. When finished, place on the strainer lid, drain out the water, and you're ready to serve. Pasta Boat uses the microwave to instantly heat and keep the water at the perfect cooking temperature. These portion handles even help you measure the spaghetti. Add this handy steam rack and enjoy the tenderest baked potatoes or healthy vegetables.
Your Pasta Boat order includes the strainer lid, measuring handles, a steamer rack, even a fast and easy recipe book for just $10. But wait, call now and we'll double your order. And that's not all. We'll send you this amazing food chopper. Just pay separate processing and handling. You get it all, a whopping $50 value for just $10. Call now.
Call 1-800-894-2721. But call now. We're giving away a bonus pasta boat and chopper with all of today's orders. So call 1-800-894-2721. Call now.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great Power Pundit panel once again today. We held them over for the day, and they look refreshed, sleeping here at the studio. Ryan Irwin is here with Ryan Irwin and Associates. Warren Hardy is the principal with Hardy Consulting, and Rose McKinney James is managing principal with Energy Works LLC. Let's talk about the Commission on Redistricting. And the way it's been put forward so far, it doesn't seem to be that there's any real conservatives on that, as Chuck Muth would say, on that panel. What's your thoughts about that and how fair this commission would end up being?
Well, you never know. I mean, there's still a lot of time in the redistricting process and a lot to do.
Unfortunately, for those who are trying to run for office.
Well it is unfortunate. You know, you don't know your district. You don't know your constituents. It's very difficult. And ultimately, the constituents are the ones that end up paying the price for that. But, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, you couldn't get a Dick Bryan and a Kenny Gwynn in the same room, because those guys could figure this out and actually have something that's fair. And maybe nobody would be happy with it because it was actually fair. You know, I don't know that that's something like that is possible. So we're going to end up with these special masters who are going to draw lines. And the question is, you know, is it really now comes to the judge for what information he asks them to do. You know, are we going to you know, give the Hispanic population, which is now 26% of the vote, the opportunity to have a congressional district? And you know, hopefully the answer is yes. I mean, regardless of partisan affiliation or advantages, you know, when any group of population earns that right, you should actually give it to them. That will impact what the rest of the, you know, what the rest of the state is, how it breaks down for congressional districts and state legislative districts. I think the hope for everyone who's not running for office in this is that we end up with as many fair districts as possible. You know, you leave it to the parties, and they're going to end up gerrymandering these things so much that, you know, you can't make heads or tails from them, and it makes it impossible to win. You end up like a state like California, where there are no general election contests. They're all primaries, and what primaries do is they push the state and federal legislatures far to the right and far to the left, and it goes to what we talked about yesterday. It makes it nearly impossible to get anything done because you've got the far right and the far left and nobody in the middle.
Yeah, Rose, do you think it's fair to have a Hispanic district? Shouldn't it be, you know, because even in northern Nevada, the Hispanic population is around 25-26% as well. So shouldn't there be a fair distribution of Hispanic votes throughout, or do you think there should be a district, as Ryan suggests?
Well, you know, I think it's a fascinating question. Ryan's the expert. I'm not. Clearly, the minority population in this state has generated a significant level of participation recently. The numbers are what they are. We do see a substantial number of Hispanic voters and Hispanic residents. How you draw the lines, though, for congressional districts, there may be, you know, a variety of other factors that we need to consider. I don't think it's a matter of fairness per se. I think it's more reality-based in terms of who's going to be responsible for drawing those lines. If it turns out that, based on the factors that they consider, a Hispanic district makes sense, then you know, I absolutely support it. But I think this is going to end up with the courts. I mean, I don't know who's going to draw these lines.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was a great article in Vegas Inc. magazine written by the editor who was talking about the Hispanic population and how wrong we are to lump everybody in together, because it's not a Hispanic population. There are Cubans, there are Mexicans, there are Venezuelans, and everybody has different thoughts, and everybody comes from a different village, and we should start thinking that way. So is it perhaps in a way wrong to think of a, quote, Hispanic vote, because they're not all on the same path?
Well, it is going to be interesting. You're exactly right. I mean, who's to say all Hispanics are Democrats or Republicans or otherwise? And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, and it's going to be very interesting because we've never done it this way. I agree with Rose. This is going to end up in the courts at some level.
Well, it's in the district court right now. It's going to end up in the Supreme Court.
Ultimately in the Supreme Court and the district court. But, you know, ultimately, this really ought to be done outside of partisanship. It's impossible to do it in the legislative process, which is kind of really where it belongs. So it's going to be interesting to see, just kind of as an experiment, how this turns out. You've got to have as the ultimate objective one man, one vote. And so I think you put aside the Hispanic, you put aside the, you know, Democrat, Republican, and just try to deliver one man, one vote and see how those districts play out.
You know, it's interesting. There's a group up in northern Nevada. It's a Republican Hispanic group that's started having meetings up there and starting to do outreach in southern Nevada. You know, the Republican Party, let's be honest here, has not looked warmly on the Hispanic population, certainly with things like the DREAM Act. You're seeing portions of that being pushed through in California. What does the Republican Party have to do to outreach the Hispanic community and say, hey, you know, we're not all against you?
Well, you know, I'm proud that our firm has elected the first Latina to the Texas Supreme Court, a Republican. You know, we currently represent John Sanchez, who's the lieutenant governor of the state of New Mexico, who's running for the United States Senate. We're also representing Michael Williams, who was a statewide African-American Republican in Texas, now running for Congress. You know, we've reached out as a firm to recruit quality, smart minority Republicans because I feel like it's an important thing for our party to do. There are others that are doing the same thing. I think ultimately what Republicans have to do is twofold. The first is we have to go recruit candidates. I mean, the more successful conservative minority candidates and minority elected officials you have will breed more success. But the second is we have to look at it as more than a 3-month, every 24-month period of time duty. We have to make it an everyday effort, and we have to look at different communities as opportunity communities, not just for the demographic purpose, but we need to reach out to small business owners, and I don't care whether they are African American or Asian or Hispanic or Caucasian or something else. We need to be reaching out to folks that have shared values, and that's not candidly something that the Republican Party's always done. And I think when we have done it, it's not been given the credit that it's due because history says that we haven't always done a good job with
that. Rose, you get the last 10 seconds on this one.
10 seconds on that suggests to me that, you know, sometimes the Democrats are more focused on the issues that certain communities are affected by. The outreach is a considerable effort, but I think at the end of the day, folks are attracted to, on a party basis, those that they feel are focused on the issues.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you all very much. Great conversation. We'll be right back on Nevada Newsmakers after this timeout.
The traditional high school isn't for everyone. If you are an advanced learner, intimidated by the setting, struggling, or just a regular student strong in some subjects and weaker in others, there's another choice to help you find your path. Online high school, powered by K-12.
I needed flexibility for my school and my music.
I couldn't go to school and take care of my kids.
K-12 works for me because I'm a pretty fast learner. That way, I get more time for flying.
K-12 powers online high schools across the country. Virtual public schools taught online by state-certified teachers. K-12 is tailored to each student's individual goals and abilities, and in most cases is tuition-free. Call or click now for a free information kit or to speak with an enrollment advisor.
K-12 gave me a second chance. I graduated high school working a full-time job.
I need to learn at my pace.
Ever since we won the school jam, Battle of the Bands, my schedule hasn't been like other kids. K-12 works out great.
Bottom line, K-12 works. Available through accredited full-time virtual public schools, it meets the needs of students of all abilities with 4 levels of curriculum, from core to AP.
Online, I get honors, electives, and AP classes, all with students just like me.
Our students have gone on to graduate. Some start careers right away. Others move on to some of the best universities in the country.
I'm studying biomedical engineering in college.
K-12 programs set a new standard for quality. They are about working hard, dreaming bigger, and finding your own path.
K-12 helped me find my path.
And my path.
And my path.
Call or click now for a free information kit or go online to learn more. Nevada Virtual Academy is currently accepting students in grades K-12 for fall 2011 enrollment. Call K-12 today or go online to learn more.
As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. On our next broadcast, Barbara Buckley will be here, the former Speaker of the Assembly, and she's got a lot on her mind.